Now, Niall Hatch, I'm just looking through Wings magazine here, and I see that you've got Twite on the cover, and it says, Twite, a native bird on the brink. So my question is, why is the Twite on the brink, and can you also describe what it looks like, please?
I will. So the Twite, it's often a really forgotten bird. So we decided to feature it in the current issue of Wings magazine. That's Birdwatch Ireland's membership magazine. And Colleen McLaughlin has written a wonderful article about it. He went with a researcher called Derek McLaughlin, who I know has been on Mooney Goes Wild in the past, to look into this bird. The Twite, when you look at a picture in a book or maybe a photograph of it, it might not be immediately the most eye-catching looking bird. So we're talking about the fantastic goldfinch, how beautiful that is. But the Twite is also a type of finch, but it's nowhere near as colourful as that. It's quite a brown, streaky little thing. Now, they have, especially on the males, they have a lovely bright pink rump, so the lower backs. When they fly, sometimes you see this gorgeous little pink rump. But they're sort of, people may know the linnet. It's a sort of even slightly drabber version of the linnet. But the thing is that with them, it's not all about appearance. They have a very important role to play in the ecosystem, and they're really being pushed to the brink. It's a species that's unfortunately looks headed almost for extinction.
It looks a bit like a sparrow to me, a chubby sparrow.
A chubby sparrow, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, slightly streakier, I would say. Up close, actually, they're quite attractive. They have a sort of a mustard kind of tone on the face. That sort of pink rump is very beautiful.
Aren't they the Gaeltacht bird?
Yes, they
are.
It
occurs in the Celtic fringes. So if you go to the Gaeltacht in the summertime, to Donegal or Mayo or Cork, you have a chance of seeing a Twite.
You do, and it's one of those birds that one of the main strongholds for at the moment is the Mullet Peninsula in County Mayo. And unfortunately, the Mullet Peninsula has been the last stronghold for several species that are on the brink. It was the last place. The corn bunting, another brown, streaky bird, made its last stand there and died out in 1991. It's the only place in Ireland now where the red-necked phalarope breeds. It's where there's a good population of corncrakes. It's sort of on the
great yellow bumblebees.
Great yellow bumblebee. It's the best place in the world, on Birdwatch Ireland's reserve, in fact.
And it says its name, Twite. If you just listen, it'll tell you who it is with a bit of luck.
And we do get some in the winter as well. So the breeding population is mainly in the northwest, in parts of Donegal, Mayo, that kind of area. Then in the winter we get some coming. I think they're Scottish birds. So they also breed in Scotland, maybe some of the ones from Norway. They come down, particularly Soldiers Point in County Louth is actually a good place to see them there. But they're thin on the ground. They're often in flocks with linnets. One of the things about Twite, they have one of the weirdest ranges of any bird in the world. So you find them in the sort of the fringes of Ireland and Britain, in the north and the west of those islands. You find them a bit in the Pennines in England. They breed in parts of Scandinavia, mainly in the coastal areas. And then there's nothing across all of Europe until you get down to Turkey and the Caucasus and then Central Asia, and the species appears again. So why it's missing from the vast majority of Europe, we don't know. It's a really weird range. And it would be shame. It would be a real shame if that bird disappeared on our watch here. It's one of these ones that because it's not so immediately attractive, perhaps, as a puffin or a goldfinch or a bird like that. Sometimes it's be hard to convince people that this is something that needs to be saved.
But what do you say in your magazine as to what's causing its demise? Is it habitat destruction? Is it climate change? Or is it lack of food? Or why is it diminishing?
It's mainly habitat destruction, habitat loss. It's a bird that would once have been quite widespread across Ireland because of the agricultural practice at the time. They rely very much on seeds, particularly wild weed seeds. So we have that kind of marginal farming, mixed farming, scrubland left. Then they do very, very well. One of the things about Twite that's very unusual for a songbird is that they are entirely vegetarian, even as chicks. So most finches, they will, even if they're vegetarians as adults, they feed insect larvae and grubs to their chicks. But the Twite only feeds seeds and vegetable material to their chicks. So they're much more sensitive to declines in plant life than their close relative, the linnet, which hasn't got the same constraints when it comes to breeding.
And I see in your this month's magazine, you have a section, Ask Gaeilge, Animnacha Éanla Éireann, and it's presumably the original, or the first article, and it's on Unpuffin, the Puffin by Fergus McLaughlin. And you have a dictionary at Lewis at the end telling us some of the words, what they mean, and there's no English translation of it. So between having the vocabulary and reading it and the picture of it, this is what you have. How's that going?
It's going very well. So we've been doing it for a couple of years now in the magazine. We've had a few of them there. Fergus has done a great job at writing this, and it's beautifully readable. I think I'd like to see more Irish language content in our magazine, in many magazines indeed, but I think it's really important that we do that. We find actually a lot of great response, particularly from schools. We've actually been asked by people, can we use this in the classroom? Yes, of course you can, absolutely. I think it's beautifully written. He's a wonderful way of writing in Irish, so it's incredibly readable, and it's great to get to know the origins of the Irish names for lots of these birds. So that's the main thrust behind it. Why what's the bird known as in Ireland, in Irish compared to the English name and so on. And with a lot of those, there's lots of really interesting stories behind this. That's something we're very keen to follow.
I see you have a lovely article here on Trim's Sandmartin Wall. And this is a series of nest boxes for sandmartins. Now, these are the fellas that live in holes in the sand on riverbanks or even by the seaside sometimes. They're under pressure too, not from land use change, but I suppose from just erosion and general unavailability of things. Terry Cassidy is talking about this.
Yeah, so Terry is one of the stalwarts of our Meath branch of Birdwatch Ireland, and they've been doing great work, as have some other Birdwatch Ireland branches, in terms of putting up habitats for things like swifts and barn owls, some nesting boxes, but also now for sandmartins, because you know this works very, very well. You're absolutely right, Aina. Things like coastal erosion, sort of flooding of rivers and so on, they have reduced the number of available nest sites for sandmartins. The sandmartins, they're members of the swallow family, but unlike the swallow and the house martin, the other one we're familiar with that nest around human structures, sandmartins excavate tunnels in the banks of rivers or perhaps on sandy cliffs. So they're very prone to erosion and to flooding. So if we can provide nesting sites where not just one or two pairs, but dozens of pairs can nest together, then the birds have a really good chance, especially if it's something that's not going to fall apart. They can rely on it year after year. We know that at Harper's Island down in Cork, and there, Jim Wilson has spoken before about the wonderful work that's going on there with their sandmartin nesting bank too. There's one at another Birdwatch Ireland Reserve in Rogerstown in North County Dublin, and we're seeing more and more of these. It's very easy to do. We know that it works. It's a great way to bring these birds back into an area and make sure they have a permanent home.
Yeah, they have swift nest boxes. I see them when they're renovating churches and that. I mean, over in Newport now, they've renovated the wonderful church in Newport Town. This is the one that has the wonderful Harry Clark windows.
Yes.
And they've made the lights so that it's not affecting the bat population. And they have the swift boxes. And the whole, you know, the whole idea of incorporating architecture, art and wildlife is a great concept. And this was something they were celebrating in Newport there early in August. You know, I was over at that. And it's great to see this all taking off and being so positively received.
Oh, absolutely, because there is no downside to having these birds around. Things like swifts and sand martins, they hoover up all sorts of midges and mosquitoes and other insects that can bother us. They have a role to play in the ecosystem, and we know that what's been limiting them very much has been the accessibility of nest sites. The swift, they always nest inside human buildings, and it used to be that church spires or high office buildings and so on had little mistakes, little nooks and crannies, little gaps where the swift could get in. Now, there's no interest in actually getting into your attic and crawling around in there. That's not what they do. They just want somewhere they can lay an egg on the ground and just rear it, and then they leave and head off. They're very clean birds. But then when renovations happen and people plug up all those gaps or put up new materials, new plastics and all of this, it means that there's nowhere for these birds to go. So something as simple as putting up these nesting boxes, you can have these nesting bricks that can be built into the walls on new built buildings. They work brilliantly well.
I wanted to ask you.
My nearest breeder in Malahide is the sandmartin.
Ah.
But there's a curiosity about it. There's a seawall and there are holes in the seawall created, left there, so that water will drain out and that kind of thing. But there's no great water pouring out of them. And there's a layer of soil on top. The soil is about half a metre to a metre thick. Now, the sandmartins come every year, and I think, well, those holes that are there waiting for you, they're perfect. Go in and nest in those. But they won't. They dig fresh holes up in the soil. I can't understand it. You might get 30 or 40 nests there, and they're all above these wonderful facilities that inadvertently we have provided for them. Can you throw any light on this peculiarity?
Well, there's no getting into their mind sometimes. Yes, they know better. And so if the opportunity is there for them to do something that they think is more natural for them, they will go for that. One of my favourite examples of something being repurposed by sandmartins is in Fermoy in Cork. On the bridge there were holes during the Irish War of Independence. There were holes drilled in there so the dynamite could be inserted and the bridge could be blown up if the British were going to come across it. Never had to happen, so no dynamite was put in. And those holes now are used by sandmartins to nest in. So
there's something.
Anyway, Niall, finally about Wings magazine, this current issue. If you're a member of Birdwatch Ireland, you've already received it. If you aren't and you want to join, you can. In the kids section, you've got colour bingo. Fantastic.
It is. This is the brainchild of my colleague Niamh Fitzgerald, who's been on the programme before. You might remember, Derek, she did the waiter special with us at New Year's there at Bull Island. But she's very big on youth engagement and she's very much involved with scouting and so on. She came up with this great idea for colour bingo, where you go out, the kids go out, they in their garden, the local park, wherever it is, and try to find different wild objects or wild plants or animals, whatever they can find, that have different colours in them. See how many you can get. And if you get the full set on your bingo card, you go bingo and you win. But it's a great way to do that. Make a game of it so children compete with each other a little bit for it, but they're learning much more about nature as they go. And some of the colours are harder to find than others. So if you want to find green, that's quite easy. You want to find blue, you have to look a little bit harder. You want to find purple, well, it takes a bit of effort, but they're all there. I think it's
not
a really
so
nice
much
idea.
Red, not so much wild red flowers. So are you allowed now to do roses and tulips and things out of gardens, or have they to be wild things? What are the rules of this bingo?
Well, you can obviously adapt it whatever way you wish to, but I think it's nice as if it's wild animals and plants that they find there. Now, you could, with red, you might find a ladybird, for example. So
that's true. It doesn't have to be a plant particularly.
I saw a kingfisher on the Dodder the other day. Blue.
And orange. So you did very
turquoise,
well there.
That wasn't blue.
Well, it looked like a flash of blue to me. It went very fast, ain't it? But I would have said blue. But you can say turquoise if you want.
Someone has to shout bingo now. You've got all the colours there.
Bingo!
But this is a nice feature we have. Yes, it's in the Bird Detectives magazine. That's the magazine that goes to Birdwatch Ireland's family, school and junior members. And it's, we get a great reaction to it actually as well. And on the subject of butterflies in this issue, actually, Colleen McLaughlin, again, the gentleman who wrote the Twite article in the other magazine, very prolific author, he wrote a lovely piece there for us, actually about the painted lady butterfly and its migration. I think it's amazing with the painted lady to think that we now know the ones in Ireland here, we thought they were doomed. They thought they'd just die out. They'd breed and then nothing would happen to them. No, they migrate all the way back to the Atlas Mountains of Morocco.
Yeah, they select the red admirals.
Exactly.
They
go up and they go, apparently go up so high you can't see them. They just fly up into the sky, get into the jet stream and are just whisked back like on a conveyor belt back to Morocco, which I think is astonishing.
We're actually making a documentary about the painted lady's migration from Morocco to Ireland and back again, which we will broadcast next June. It's going to be fantastic.
A hungry feeling came on me stealing, and the mice were squealing in my prison cell. And the owl's triangle went jingle jangle all along the banks of the Royal Canal.
You can't bait the Dubliners. There's nothing to compare.